Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast, featuring dynamic conversations with emerging and established visionary men on purpose. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate the men on purpose who are committed, creative, courageous change makers all around the world. Now, here's the host of Men on Purpose, Emerald Greenforest.
Welcome to another episode of the Men on Purpose podcast, where we celebrate men on purpose and provide our listeners with wisdom and immediately actionable steps to be more purposeful, powerful, and positive in their impact and their leadership. This is your host, Emerald Greenforest, and today we welcome our special guest, Lee Jenkins. Lee is a career educator who has been mentored for years by some of the most talented, dedicated, purposeful educators on the planet. His solutions to many of the education's problems are unique and powerful. They are applied equally well in kindergarten and grade 12. He has written over 15 books, but his best by far is How to Create a Perfect School, released on Amazon in June of 2019. For the first time, he has included quite a few chapters for parents instead of the complete audience being educators. So I am very delighted to say also that I had the pleasure of meeting Lee in person at the National Publicity Summit in New York City in October of 2019, and thought that his vision and his voice deserved a place on the show. So I'm so grateful that you are here with us, Lee. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Emerald. It is just a treat to be with you and to have a chance to talk with you and your listeners. I think we're going to have a great time. I certainly have enjoyed the learning. I bought a book, another book by Mark Batterson the other day, and it's called Double Blessing. And he said the first blessing on money was earning it, and the second blessing was giving it away. Well, for me, it has been the first blessing has been learning over all these years, and the second blessing is saying giving it away.
Beautiful, Lee. Well, I'm excited that you're here. And I want to ask you, I want to start by asking you, how did you get called into the work that you're doing and into this desire to learn and then to give your learning away? Did you have something that happened in your life? Did you have a relative who was in the education that inspired you? Was there a teacher in your own life that inspired you? You know, where did the calling come from? Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, can you talk about maybe the feelings that you had when you were starting to get called to this work?
In the acknowledgments in the book that you mentioned, How to Create a Perfect School, I list about 30 people who've been so influential. The one who most has influenced my life was W. Edwards Deming. He lived from 1900 to 1993. And at age 92, in 1992, I heard him speak for 4 days. So he certainly inspired me that just because you're up there in age doesn't mean that you need to stop sharing what you've learned over the years. But he taught, I must have been 3 minutes, he shared the foundation of what I do and then went on to something else. He was a statistician. So when I look at education, most statistics in education, that they're harmful. Okay? Now, the people who put it together aren't trying to harm, but that's the result. And so he talked about joyous harm. How do we have data that the teachers and the administrators and the students and the parents celebrate over? And he shared that. And so that's the most influential. And I knew when I heard him that he was right. And that was what I was going to add to what I'd learned earlier. And it was going to be a mission to share that for as long as my health holds up and the phone rings and people still call me.
Beautiful. Well, I believe that I know a little bit about W. Edwards Deming. Wasn't he into just-in-time manufacturing or
Yes.
He studied corporations and industrial activities and those sorts of things. And so how does like his work connect with education? Were you already an educator? Were you already
a teacher?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And how long have you been a teacher?
Well, I've been in education over 50 years.
Okay. And so were you also in the administrative side of education?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It was an administrator conference where I heard him speak.
Yeah.
And it's the only time he spoke to educators as the primary audience.
Nice.
But in his writing, he says the root causes of problems in business, government, and education are identical.
Tell me more.
One of the root causes, and all three, is poor psychology. We think the employees need to be motivated and we think the kids need to be motivated. Well, that's terrible advice. The children start kindergarten already motivated. They don't need to be motivated. They come to us already motivated. So our job's not to motivate them. Our job is to maintain the motivation they came with. And if they've lost it, we don't try to motivate them. It doesn't work. We say, huh, how come you're not excited about school anymore? Tell me your story. And then we work with them to restore them back the way they used to be in kindergarten.
Nice. So that's the work that you do with educators, or is that the work that you do with parents?
Well, yes. And when you talk to parents, it's a slight twist, but it's the same thing. It says, you know, for 5 years, prior to them going to kindergarten, you answered a million and one questions. You did your best to keep that enthusiasm going. You loved it every step of the way what they learned. And now your job is to protect that enthusiasm. Don't let anybody, whether they're a relative, whether they're a neighbor, whether they're in a church, whether they're in a school, don't let anybody destroy that motivation. Your job is to protect it. Now, the little things in life, you let them solve their own problems. You don't want to be the helicopter parent that's hovering over them for every little thing. Let them solve the little ones on their own. But keeping their intrinsic motivation for learning, that's a biggie.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I believe that we're all born to learn. So I'm right there in alignment with you, Lee. It's interesting. My son, when he went to kindergarten, his kindergarten teacher told him he was slow. And he actually internalized that. So, you know, I think part of the problem is the system itself. And part of the problem can be personalities with teachers sometimes, maybe, you know, that have been trained themselves to rely more on these statistical, you know, systems and the labeling and all of that. Can you talk a little bit more about what your vision is for a perfect school? And, you know, I love teachers and I think teachers are grossly underpaid and, you know, there's all kinds of problems with that that needs to be addressed, obviously, of course, but I believe our children are our most precious resource. Yeah. And yeah, and the system was built for the industrial era to turn out factory workers, and we don't even have very many factories anymore. So can you talk a little bit about your vision and where this vision came from for the perfect school and your own process in saying yes to the vision?
Okay, so let's talk about the word perfect, first of all. It came, actually, it's got a Deming root, but it came from reading books about Toyota Corporation. And they start their planning process by defining perfect. Then they say, we will never be perfect. Then they say, where are we now? And they limit their planning strategies, their time for planning, closing the gap between where they are now and perfect, knowing they'll never get there, but trying to get closer. So that caused me to say, well, what would perfect in education be? Well, perfect would be that the enthusiasm children bring with them to kindergarten is maintained for 12 more years. Mm-hmm. That would be perfect.
Or maybe for life.
but at least for the schools. Through 12th grade. And where are we now? Well, my research is about less than 10% of the kids are as enthused about learning as they were when they started kindergarten. Now, 40% of the kids in high school love high school, but it's not for learning. It's for games, athletics, the music trips, friends. But it's not for the learnings. Somewhere below 10% still come to school to learn. So we got a long ways to go to get back to perfect. And psychology has a lot to do with it. So why would a teacher say that your son was slow? It's poor statistics because they're looking at a bell curve. And they're saying, okay, here's the bell curve and your son happens to be on the left side of that in her opinion. Doesn't mean he is, but in her opinion. The better psychology is to say, wherever you are, I'm going to celebrate with you when you do better than you've ever done before. And they call that all-time best. Mm. I got an email from a first grade teacher in Nebraska late last week. And a kid wrote ATB on his paper himself because he said, this is my best work I've ever done, my all-time best. Then I got a video from four-year-olds pre-K. And they are marching down the hall and they're singing out, all-time best, all-time best, all-time best, all-time best. Why? Because the class as a whole, because we add up the total for all the kids in the room, and each kid is asked to read 5 letters a week at random. Well, then they add up how many letters they read as a class, and the class did better than it's ever done. So they're out on the hallway celebrating to go find the school superintendent to tell her that we had our all-time best. It's just simple. John Maxwell wrote, he said, I only want to be better than my former self. That is so simple, but we don't do that. We want to rank and compare instead of saying, here you are. Your only goal is to do better than you've done. Then do better again, then do better again. But we do that not only for the individual, we do it for the class as a whole, we do it for the whole school.
Beautiful. I love that. And what I'm hearing here, and I just really want to pause us for a second and really slow this down, because I really want the people who are listening, the parents who are probably listening, and potentially some educators who are listening. This is a complete mindset shift.
It is.
From the command and control mindset of competition and comparison that's deeply entrenched in the foundation of the education system as it currently stands. So what I really am excited about is that this is a psychological shift. And I want to hear from you, how much pushback have you received, or how much have you been welcomed with these ideas into the systems that you're brought into to facilitate this change?
The pushback is directly related to how much time I have to work with the teachers and the principals. So the school that I just have worked with a lot this year, I had 4 days last May after school was out. I've been with them 5 days in September, 5 days in November, and I'm not sensing any pushback. That's over 100 teachers. Now, there may be some, but I haven't experienced it, and the administrators tell me they're amazed at how much. Mm. But if I go in and I talk to a group of people for an hour, there's going to be pushback. Because what I've learned about the educators is they're not as impressed as much with logic as they are with the attitude of the children. And all I can share from the state myself is logic. But when they implement it with kids and see kids excited that weren't excited before about learning, then they're a believer. But they feed off of the kids. The three words that I would like parents and kids to keep in mind is from John Hattie, an Australian educator, but it's easy to remember because they rhyme: skill, will, and thrill.
All right.
So, of course, we're interested in skill, but the kids are in charge of will, which is effort. Adults can do whatever you want to do, but the kids are in charge of effort. And they're not going to put forth the effort if they don't get thrill from the learning. So if you just focus on skill by itself, you lose. But when you take all three together as a team, skill, will, and thrill, you can get the skill you want.
Beautiful. I love that. We're going to talk more about this when we come back. We've got to go to the break already, Lee. Men on Purpose, we need your help. If you're enjoying this show and want to stay on the air, please consider making a donation at www.menonpurposepodcast.com. We'd also like to ask you to share with your lovely lady friends that a brand new show is now being broadcast just for them, called Wickedly Smart Women Podcast. I want to thank all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We've already had thousands of downloads from all over the world. And I want to shout out this week to our listeners in Egypt. Let's shout out to our listeners in Egypt, and we will be right back with Lee Jenkins.
The Men on Purpose podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Men, are you ready to take the leap and go deep to discover the most meaningful mark you can make with your life? Is now the time to consciously craft the legacy life you want to lead? Are you already a legendary leader looking for your big what's next? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to help men just like you to gain clarity, create consciously, and commit courageously. Please visit TimeToMakeYourMark.com to apply for an invitation-only consultation. Be sure to apply for a consultation today if you have been inspired to receive support in serving your purpose and making your most meaningful mark. Once again, that's TimeToMakeYourMark.com, or click on the link in the show notes for access to the application.
And we are back with Lee Jenkins, who is the author of How to Create a Perfect School that was released on Amazon in June of 2019. Definitely recommend you go to Amazon and get a hold of that book. And also want to send you to his website, lbelj.com, which we will put in the show notes. And I'm going to ask him after I make this little announcement what L. Bell J. is all about, because I think it's really important for people to hear exactly what he's got going on there. And definitely, if you are a parent, he has a parent advice sheet on his site that you can download with questions to ask about education and also some information about Skill, Will, Thrill, which we were talking about right before the break. So can you share with us, Lee, what L. Bell J. actually means, what it stands for? I know that it's helpful to have visuals, but I think that you could probably communicate it without. And what your overall intent is here as you put yourself out there now to start serving parents in addition to educators?
Well, everybody listening to this knows what a bell curve is. So the bell curve is not what we want at the end of a course. So a professor who grades on the curve has the wrong mindset. The bell curve is a definition of failure. What we're after, when we assess kids the beginning of the year on what we want them to know at the end of the year, we don't get a bell curve the first week of school. We get a curve that looks more like the letter L. And as we continue to assess them on what we want them to learn at the end of the year, in the middle of the year, we have a bell curve. It's entirely appropriate for the middle of the year. But at the end of the year, we want to shove that bell and push it clear over to the right, and it looks more like the letter J. So we're going from an L through the bell to a J.
Nice. And the J represents that they have acquired the skills.
Yes.
Great. Yes. So now talk about Skill, Will, Thrill a little bit more and how the will and the thrill contribute to the enhancement of the skill when we're not grading and assessing progress in this old-fashioned way.
Well, when you assess in an old-fashioned way, you create winners and losers. That's what you do. And you can go into classrooms. I take pictures of these charts. One comes to mind. It's a huge bulletin board that looks like a football field. And there's a helmet on the football field for every kid with their name on it in big letters. Well, you walk in and you instantly see who the winners are and who the losers are. That's traditional education. Now, the teachers are not trained to create losers. They've been told if you do this, you're going to motivate them. Well, you motivate the two or three that are near the goal line, and you demotivate all the kids that are still at the one-yard line. So then people say, well, isn't competition what we want? And I say, not in academics, but yes, in games and sports. You know, the kids have to learn. If four of us sit down to play Monopoly, one's going to win and three are going to lose. That's competition. We go to a soccer match. The parents know and the kids know when you go. One team's going to win and one team's going to lose. Okay? So we do have competition. But parents don't send their kids to school to be a loser in anything. They don't sign up and say, well, half the kids at the school are going to learn math and half aren't, so I don't want my kid to be one of the loser kids. No, they want all the kids to be winners. How do we get all the kids to be winners? Well, the kids have to earn it. We don't give it to them. It's not a participation trophy. We don't give you something because you came to school. We honor you with a thank you, a sense of gratitude, when you do better than you've done before. And in the school where I've been working this year, when a kid does better than they've ever done before on whatever assessment is, they get a sticky note, write their name on the sticky note, and it goes in the hallway. In November, there must have been 600 or 700 sticky notes out in the hallway, just going up and down over the doorways and making a big long tail of their school mascot, Cougar, and all down and around and over and around because they just did better than they've ever done before. And they earned it.
Yeah.
Not a gift. They have to earn it.
Right. Well, what I love about this too is that it psychologically is very damaging and for life sometimes to people who, you know, see themselves as incapable because they didn't pass math or they didn't pass, you know, something, whatever, in the old system. And each person, each child is being asked to do just to show up and be engaged in the process in a positive way, in service to measuring against themselves and not against this false, like some people are naturally gifted in soccer and some people are naturally gifted in art and some people are naturally gifted in math. And so what I'm hearing here is that the entire environment is set for nourishing and flourishing what each individual child is best at, and helping them to have good confidence in improving themselves in every area, even areas where they may not be best at, but they're aiming to get better in those areas.
So let's talk about some areas where they're not best at. Mm-hmm. This is the one that's the tearjerker for the teachers, because we add up the total for the whole class. I mentioned that to you earlier, Emerald. So let's say that when you add up the total questions right for the class, the most you'd had before was 100. And let's say that you add it up again this week, because we do this most weeks, and you add it up and it's 102 questions right for the class. It's their all-time best. The kid that's struggling, that's having a hard time, who got two questions right out of, say, 10, okay, does a chest pump and says to the whole world, it was me. It was my two questions that put us over the top. I did it. Mm-hmm. And the whole class applauds that kid and says, thank you. If it hadn't been for you, we wouldn't have got to celebrate that the class had an all-time best. You did it for us. Mm-hmm. So you see, the kids are motivated, yes, by doing their personal all-time best, but they're equally motivated by contributing to the team.
Nice.
Okay, it's both. It's not an either or, it's both.
Nice. And you're also inculcating right at the beginning this team effort for all of the children to be, like, I didn't grow up in an era where teaming was, except for in athletics, where teaming was really something that we focused on. It was like, are you producing? It was more like, are you producing, which is the old industrial era education system. So I want to ask you, because we're close to the end here, what's your vision, Lee, for getting your work into more schools and changing the education system across the board? What are you doing in your own business? I'm grateful of all of the education that you've given to us about your system and what it does and how it helps people. But what are you doing for yourself and in your own business? Like, what challenges do you have and what can we help you with to get better at to get this work out to more people?
It is a challenge because, like, one of the things we do is we take away cramming. We make it so it's impossible to cram. You actually have to learn. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So when administrators are thinking about putting on a conference and bringing somebody in to speak to their teachers, they don't think, oh, who could help us get rid of cramming? It doesn't enter their mind. They assume that it's a given and you can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And the other things we've talked about on the data, they don't assume that data could be for joy. Mm-hmm. They assume that data, we can't do anything about it, it's harmful. So my challenge is helping people see the vision of what I've shared with you in the time we have here together on this podcast. Because once they see the vision, then they say, oh, we need Lee Jenkins to come talk to us and work with us. Mm. Because it changes, like you say, it turns it upside down, what's been going on for centuries.
Right.
We get this debate between what's best, the public or the charter or the private or the Christian schools, some Catholic and some Protestant. My perspective is they all have the same problems. Mm. They're all using data for harm. Okay. Mm. And people can have their personal preference, but I've worked in all of those kinds of schools, and they all have the same root causes of poor psychology and poor data.
Well, and we have to add on top of that that the governmental forces are also relying on those data as well.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
But you see, if you take away cramming, the kids actually remember, one of the teachers I've worked with for about 10 years now, I said last March, I said, Cody, there's a chapter on Cody in my book, by the way, fifth grade teacher in South Sioux City, Nebraska. But I said, Cody, how long did you spend getting ready for the state test? She said, well, maybe 5 minutes. And middle schools, it's a couple months getting ready for it. Why? Why only 5 minutes? Because she knows that they've remembered.
Yeah.
They remembered. And we get 6 times the learning of the average classroom.
Wow.
And I ask teachers, why? I get the same answer every time, because the kids actually remember in May what I taught them in September.
Yeah.
We take away cramming. We replace it with learning. We change it from a forgetting system to a remembering system. But they're not going to remember it if they hate it. That's that skill, will, and thrill all goes together, right?
Yeah.
It all fits.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love it. I'm so grateful that you're on the planet, Lee. And, I definitely want to help you to get this work out to even more people, because we really, really, really need to create some significant transformation in the education system and help those children that we have the opportunity to help to have a completely different experience than I certainly did, and I'm sure you did, and my child did. So thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I definitely want people to check out lbelj.com. Parents, be sure to download the information there. And parents, you be the advocate for Lee to come into your school system and, you know, talk to your superintendent, talk to your principal, talk to the teachers and see if they'd be willing to hear him out and hire him as a consultant. Thanks again for coming, Lee. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Emerald. It was a treat. It was a real treat. And your passion shows, and you tell you care about this. And so I'm glad for the invitation and the opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's one of my prayers. I've been praying for some people to come through that can correct the education system, because I think it's a foundational cause of a lot of the challenges that we have. And everything is holistic. So if you pull one thread out of the sweater, you're going to tear the whole sweater apart. You know what I mean? But if we can get to the education thread, that's going to make a huge difference in the quality of life for everyone, I think. So yeah, okay. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
Bye. All right. Listeners, we love feedback. Please let us know what you think of today's show. We do have a new listener line set up where you can call in and leave a message. The number is 540-402-0043, extension 3333, or send in questions or guest suggestions to listeners at menonpurposepodcast.com. We might even give you a shout out on the show. I want to thank you for tuning in. Keep your ears open. And remember, you are magnificent men.
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to review and rate Men on Purpose on Apple Podcasts and share with other men who can benefit from today's episode. Men on Purpose is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leader who has made his money and knows now is the time to make his mark. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of each new episode at menonpurposepodcast.com.